I've got this. Have you? I don't know if you've seen this yet. It's called The Book of Symbols. It was put out by Tashin.
Oh, yeah. I know. I love their books, by the way.
Yeah, this book, it's been popping up all over the place. My friend Paul Levy up in Portland was the first one to show me it, and then they had it at the Museum of Contemporary Art. I ended up buying it there, and I just saw it a couple days ago. So I've got it in front of me. It's got like a hand on it. So I'm just gonna sort of consult it for a moment, and then just open it up to a page, just to see what it wants to reveal in terms of. I mean, I'm not even sure if this is to pose a question about whether to continue or not. I'd actually, be totally good to just sort of call it good here, but maybe just to complete the conversation more on a personal level between you and I, Alan.
Sure, yeah, I like that.
Okay, so just gonna take a minute to feel into it. And just inviting a symbol, an image that can offer insight and clarity of purpose to both Alan and I over the course of the following days as we approach the full moon. Particularly anything that may also be of service to the community at large. Ready for it?
Yeah, I am. What did you come up with?
Page 505, The Wheel of the Sun.
Okay.
It's an eight spoke wheel. This photograph, it's actually beautiful. I'll see if I can find the photograph and send you it. It says here, the Wheel of the Sun, nearly 10 feet in diameter. The Wheel of the Sun Temple of Konarak is one of 24 attached to two sides of the imposing structure. The temple represents the divine chariot that carries the sun god Surya across the heavens from dawn to dawn. Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting complement to the question of the approaching full moon. Is saying to giving us a solar symbol.
Yeah, I also see this sort of solar chariot as could very much be again like the fire truck symbol. On a personal level, I won't necessarily go into it for our recording, but on a personal level, that actually speaks very much to me as to what I should be doing, so.
Maybe get some sunlight here.
Yeah, that's a good answer too.
Yeah, it's like go outside and feel the sun. Oof, God, the pictures of the wheel are so beautiful here. Okay, so there's actually just only like three paragraphs here. Maybe I'll read it before we split.
Yeah, sounds great.
Cool. It says, the sun wheel is a version of the mythic circle of totality and its hub, or eye. The ambivalent center manifest in the fiery, seed-germinating creative rotation of the rim. Fire truck. The wraith spokes of the great solar wheel of ancient cultures divide the cosmic whole into measures of time or space, the four seasons, phases of the moon, elements or cardinal directions, the eight-petaled lotus, emblems of continuous renewal, the 12 months of the zodiac and their astral configurations and transits, the whirling of the changeable about the hub of eternity. The wheeling of the stars around the pole sets in motion the cycles of nature and the course of life. Or in Tibetan Buddhism, the wheel of life portrays rebirth as the succession of different states of existence, all in the grip of the monster of impermanence. Tarot's Wheel of Fortune signifies turns of destiny and order, extension, time, and duration. In the wheel-like circulation process of the alchemical opus, there is implied mystic peregrination. Ascents and descents, sublimation and coagulation, one moving into the other until synthesized at the hidden center. Eventually bringing the heavenly wheel down to earth, humans discovered that logs or round stones could be made into sledges for moving heavy objects, that grooves and fixed axles in these primitive wheels increased their efficiency and stability. The oldest excavated wheel from Mesopotamia is approximately 5,500 years old. But however we may take it for granted, the wheel still occupies a place between the concrete and imaginal, the potter's wheel that rotates formless matter into differentiated being, the millstone that once seemed to magically harness nature's power, but also evokes the intolerable heaviness of endless repetition. The spinning wheel that produces the threads of fate and belongs to both fairy godmother and murderous witch, the wheels of ordinary life, cars, trams, trucks, buses, bicycles, and planes, reiterated in our dreams as vehicles of psychic motility in the grooves of progress, regression, and routine. In myths and life, the wheel has also been used as an instrument of torture on which one is fixed or stretched, suggesting the agonizing nature of psychic compulsion. Negatively, the well of the wheel is emblem of being stuck in a rut, or of endlessly turning the wheels of the mind but getting nowhere. In Mahayana Buddhism, cause and effect is the wheel that cannot be turned back. Some of the most intriguing of wheels are the giant medicine wheels of the Plains Indians of Alberta, Canada, and Wyoming, Montana, and the Dakotas in the United States. Stone wheels, some as great as 12 meters in diameter, their center consists of piled rock from which extends stone spokes. The precise meaning of the mysterious wheel is not known. They may have served as an orientation for sun ceremonials or were used for rituals of healing. There are configurations of the stone that seem to refer to particular stars, and some of the cairns are aligned with the light of the sunrise or sunset at the summer solstice, perhaps invoking this life-bestowing radiance. So it is.
That's awesome. And that's funny because when, as I said, I wasn't really going to go into it, but what I explained to you the book I'm writing where I feel like I've been turning the wheel and kind of getting nowhere. Mm-hmm. It's about the interplay between two sort of major symbol hubs, one of which being the king, the sort of dying king, and the other is the wheel, and particularly the what's known as the Catherine wheel. And that Catherine wheel is the wheel as a torture device is where it sort of gets its name. Is there was this woman, Saint Catherine, who was to be placed upon, you know, to be tortured upon this wheel, what they called the breaking wheel. And where they would like break people's bones upon it. And when she touched the wheel, because of she says a prayer to Christ, and the wheel shatters into many pieces, and they can't kill her that way. So of course I believe they just decapitate her instead. I see this idea of the shattering the wheel as sort of breaking free of that sort of, you know, obviously there are cycles to respect and to be a part of, and then there's this other concept of shattering the wheel of sort of when the loop becomes a prison or a closed loop, to sort of break it, rearrange it, and to find a sort of new solution. And of course, like I said, there are perhaps some cycles which, you know, that a cycle such as the summer solstice and lunar cycles. I mean, these are things you're not necessarily trying to break out of, but there are other things that can become a loop or a closed system. So that's something that, even though you know, I feel called to the importance of this symbol and the need to write about it, I think it's a lesson to actually implement it.
Maybe this is going to continue then, because, you know, I mean, just to sort of continue our thread here, there was actually, when I was participating in SWEDA back in, this was 2008, I was joking with Steve. Steve had this stalker. Steve Wilner had this stalker on Facebook, and as he was getting, she was like saying she loved him so much, blah blah blah. And then the next breath, she wanted to kill herself, and she why couldn't she just be with him and all this stuff? So it was this really sort of psychotic female energy that was coming at him, and I had at the same time also this woman that was coming at me. She was from England. Her name was Kat, K-A-T, and she was this fan of the synchromusicology videos who had reached out to me and offered, you know, some friendly words, and I had written back to her, and pretty soon she was playing out the exact same thing with me. Now, the first pet that I can recall. I know I had a dog when I was like 3 years old or something, but I can't even remember. I think, the first pet I ever had that was really with our family for a long time was this cat named Kit Kat, KK, spelled with like, KAT as well. And she came from an abused family, and she and I didn't get along at all. So, to where I was even like, I was kind of a really shitty little kid in some ways, like as far as animal abuse goes. It's interesting how if there's a lot of stress in the family system, it can play out in like kind of terrible ways. Like just so that, for example, I'd want to like play with her and she wouldn't want to play with me. So I'd like run around and like torture her, like pick her up and throw her or something. Really terrible stuff. And so I got caught in her own cycle of abuse or something. It's really interesting to contemplate. On the one hand, I have to take total responsibility and say, yeah, that was me who did that. I chose to do that. And so, it's not like she made me do that. But on another hand, people who are victims of abuse, they tend to manifest abusers in their life. And so it's interesting to see how, in a way, Kat was like attracting this abuse. I'm talking about Kit Kat. But then later, like this stalker cat, she came after me through Facebook and was playing out the same thing, to where I wanted to like just kind of lash out at her verbally. But I never did. I actually pulled back. And I felt, in a way, I experienced like this internal quantum leap where it was like, oh, I'm not the abuser. I'm actually going to just find a way to peacefully resolve this. But then, the third iteration of this, and there's been many micro iterations, but the third like major one came around this character during winter of 2011 in Portland while, Steve Wilner was living just down the block. And again, this woman, Catherine, shows up. I met her through, there's like this, this nonprofit organization called Food Not Bombs. Sure, I don't know if you guys have that.
Yeah.
So I was working, I was volunteering with Food Not Bombs, and there was this really cute older woman named Catherine with a K. And we hung out a few times. We ended up getting pretty close and we were connected. But she was like, I think she was in her late 30s or something. And she was really interested in the whole magical aspect of what I was interested in as well. Like she wanted to know more about tarot, and she was kind of leading me on in a way. The first time I ever showed up at her house, she poured me a cup of tea, and as she was pouring me the cup, I looked down at her table, and lo and behold, there's this letter that was addressed to her house, like with her address on it, and the name of the person on the letter who was addressed to was Melissa. And right as I noticed that, Catherine says, Ezra, would you like some honey in your tea? So I tripped out with her on the whole Melissa thing. And this was prior to the new year. So this is, this actually predated that whole trip. But so the whole, like Catherine, things actually ended up not working too well with Catherine, not in a bad way, but we phased out of our friendship. But it's just, she's definitely part of the mythic narrative in my own life. And so, I mean, to hear you tying her into the wheel, the unshatterable wheel, and having to cut off the head, I wonder sometimes if the way that the personal narrative, like the dream, unfolds on that level is actually also revealing to us what that larger, collective narrative would be. So that, for example, the cutting off of the head is to, if Catherine is this autonomous complex in the collective, if we even took it a step further and said the reason that Catherine is the way that she is because that name itself has so much energy around it, as like the name Catherine exists in the human collective. And so when she hears that name applied to herself, her ego is identified with a non-local archetypal complex. That's just a theory. But anyway, if that's true and I'm interacting with both her as an ego, but also with Catherine as like the complex through her, then to cut off the head is to take away the life force, or to take away the organizing, like the mastermind behind that. So, it seems like I couldn't escape the wheel of like the abuser and the abused. By the way, this woman, Catherine, was kind of like, she had a lot of wounding. She'd been like kind of abused or something. So it seems like a recurring theme, almost like the wounded feminine. And so to just like decapitate it, or I think of Medusa, or just all of those, like those wounded feminine myths where you have to take away their ability to think for themselves in order to sort of free yourself from it. I'm wondering if that brings up anything for you.
Sure. I mean, and I think it applies, this is the feminine version of the king kill, in my opinion. To me, the king kill is what we need to sometimes cut our own head off to you know, get out of our that mind trap, or you know, that sometimes the ego prison. And I'm not anti-ego, I just mean that as in the sense of, I think we all know what I'm talking about. You can get stuck in your head. So sometimes there's a need to do that to yourself. But I just, what I find most striking about this is earlier this week, I had this dream where someone is handing me a Kit Kat, and I could see it so clearly, this orange chocolate wrapper. And it was so bizarre to me that I woke up thinking, like, I don't really crave junk food. So I was like, I knew it wasn't that. I have to say, like, my initial reaction was it felt like what I call dreamvertising, you know? It was like, like there was, like, some product placement in my dream of, like, suddenly someone's like, here, have a Kit Kat. And I was like, you know, oh, it's so good. I'm like, what is with this? Like, it felt, like, really unnatural. But that's so funny, because if you're relating this to that same thing, which I think is just awesome. And it actually reminds me, taking it a step further, I know Jay Coetzee had done years ago relating the Kit Kat as a, since it's a KK, is, of course, he saw it as cosmic consciousness or Christ consciousness, but also is the KK is the king kill. So just the for James Shelby Downard sort of angle on it, it was the KK-33. It's just really, really interesting to me that it really seems so tied in. I just thank you for bringing it. Like I said, I was trying to make sense of this strange appearance of a Kit Kat in my dream. And
Far out. I mean, the one other association I have with that is just, you know, if you sort of abstract, like something I like to do is, did you ever take algebra in school?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, so let's say you have like, for example, you have like 8 plus 4, right? And you know that that's 12. Okay, so like you could say 2 times 4 plus 2. So what you're doing is you're like abstracting I it's kind of hard for me to verbalize because I don't know like how to say it in math speak, but basically you would have parentheses 2 and then like parentheses 4 plus 2.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then you could like, you know, redistribute. You're abstracting something. So in Kit Kat, you could say like K2 in parentheses and then like it plus at. You know what I'm getting at with that?
Yeah.
Okay. So like if we were just to like abstract the whole like cosmic conscious thing, what you have left is like it and at. And they both had this really sort of directional monadic quality to them. Like it is an object and at is the location of that object. So it's like the ultimate like orientation. And so like K2, like where it is at. It's like that's where it's at. It's like the you know, 11:11 or just that awakening to cosmic consciousness. And what is it? Well, it's like when I think of Kit Kat, I think of like the snapping or the crunching or the, you know, just like the, like how it snaps.
Give me a break,
break me off a piece. So when I think of Kit Kat, I literally just think of like that cat breaking in half, which is like, then again, you have like the decapitation or decadentation or
I love
whatever.
It. The Catherine wheel, the fact that the Catherine wheel is a breaking wheel. It's literally called a breaking wheel. Break me off a piece.
Right.
That's awesome.
Weird. It's so physical too, like the feminine tying into the mother and the physical realm. Like the Kit Kat is like kind of, it's almost an analog to our bones. Like, do you remember Mortal Kombat?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
The first time I ever saw a movie, I was living in Virginia, which is actually when Kit Kat was living in our house, was in Virginia. And I had this this babysitter, Jeremy, and he took me out. I must have been like 9 or 10 when that movie came out. 25 now, so I'd have to do the math. But so we went to see that movie, and the opening scene I can't even remember, like I'm sure somebody else would remember better than I do, but there's like those two guys fighting. It's like the main character is like this Asian guy and then like the sensei who he's fighting with. Remember that
I've actually
scene?
never seen the movie. I remember there was a video game that they made a movie out of.
Oh my God, you've never seen the movie. Well, okay, so let me just. Basically, the movie opens up with like this dream sequence. And in the dream sequence, they're like in this totally like the classic dream style. Like, there's like a small sort of arena. And inside of the arena, there's these two people fighting. And one is older than the other, but they're both men. And the man, the older man, like puts him in a certain lock and like snap, he like breaks his bones. And the bone, the sound of the bone crunching was so visceral. And like right at that moment, the dreamer snaps out of the dream, and it's the main character. He's like in this hot sweat, and he's surrounded. He's like flooded in this green light in his apartment. And I'll never forget that scene. Like, I actually had to leave the movie. I was like, no, I can't, Jeremy, I can't take this. Like, we had to walk back home because it was just like too intense for me. But so Kit Kat of like the breaking of bones or the feminine tying into the bone. We were talking about the organs earlier, and I guess I just want to call it into also the awareness of the skeletal. Because I mean, you know, and in Kabbalah, they're hip to this. Like Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh or the Tetragrammaton has also been seen as a formula, each letter representing one of the elements, and each of those elements actually corresponding to one of the major aspects of our body, so that
And
the
you,
earth element
sorry, and you, and
connects
you
to
can
the
even,
elements.
you can even arrange the characters, to create a sort of stick figure.
You can? You'll have to show me that one.
Yeah, it's the idea that, if you arranged the four characters in the Tetragrammaton, you can make a sort of, what's essentially a stick figure, which, some people take to be that, you know, it's the idea of, what is God? You know,
So like Yod would be the head, right? And then like He would be the two arms, and
and the
then
two legs, right?
Vav would be the stomach, and then He would be the two legs. Yeah, I could see that.
Exactly, yeah. So it's sort of like that, almost even, have you seen like the painting of the on the Sistine Chapel, that sort of image of God, you know, creating Adam? And that's actually representative of a human brain. I don't know if you've seen this image.
No, I don't. Maybe you can send that to me. I'm not sure. I mean, I might have seen it, but I'm not sure which one you're referring
It's
to.
just different sort of concepts that perhaps these elements were saying, what is God, you know? And they're representing it as God is man elevated, that you have this potential within you. So the God that's creating Adam is really a human brain. So you have the potential there, or that the Tetragrammaton.
You're talking about the one where he's reaching his finger out,
Exactly,
where
yeah.
got like their fingers are almost touching.
Exactly. If you look at him, now you notice he has all these sort of cherubim around him, and there's this sort of almost like comic bubble shape.
Hello?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Hello?
Hey.
Hey.
That was really weird. I guess Jehovah didn't like me saying that, but
Yeah, I wasn't sure. I actually typed it in, and I realized you were talking about like that super famous, like the one that I would have thought you were talking about, like with God reaching out to Adam and their fingers were almost touching.
Exactly.
And so, but I never had seen that like being associated with their brain, but I typed it into Google, and they're showing it. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, I can see that. Look, it does look just like a brain.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. So, I was I, in my mind at least, I see a comparison between that as a human brain and the Tetragrammaton as a sort of stick figure. I see those potentially being symbolizing the same concept of, you know, it's even that, you know, Bob Marley, a mighty God is a living man sort of thing.
Right. I mean, also the whole idea of like that pointing, the expression of pointing in the Alphabet Verse of the Goddess, that Leonard Schlein book. Have you read that?
No, I haven't.
It's a classic in our field. You know, Tessarian wrote about it, and I remember Jason wrote about it in Lucid View for a moment. But what he talks about, he basically says like there was this quantum leap in human evolution of consciousness at the moment when we realized that when one person pointed, you could actually follow the line, the invisible line of where they were pointing to, and that it would actually get, there would be a reward associated with that. So for example, if there was something like watch out or look, that's where the food is, by having the intelligence to be able to follow that gesture, that's how like hand signals arose, and that's how then we could like create language, basically that the pointing was the source of the creation of language. So the idea that God is like pointing outward from the brain, that there is this projective quality of consciousness that projects outward through the brain, through the mind, you know, to one another. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, and I love that, you know, Adam is essentially pointing right back, because we're, you know, we're casting something into the void and the void is casting back.
Hmm.
Right? It's very much a mirror.
Absolutely. And well, thank you for being such a good mirror, Alan. It's really fun to have conversations with you, because I know I can just free associate, and I know you're right there with me, and vice versa. It's great.
Absolutely. I thank you for this.
Sound and vision.